This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's American Politics Today. We're about to speak with Richard Ramlal, who's Strategic and External Affairs Senior Vice President at RCN. Welcome to American Politics Today.
Thank you, Mark.
Why don't you just tell us first, where are you exactly?
Well, I'm actually speaking to you at our Herndon, Virginia location, where we have a corporate office. It's actually in addition to our corporate offices. In terms of RCN, we operate in several states, mostly in the Northeast cluster, beginning from Boston in the Boston market. We're in New York. We're also in Philadelphia and Lehigh Valley, which is are both in Pennsylvania. In the Washington, D.C. area, where we now operate as RCN, although many people from the local area know us as by our old name, Star Power. We're also in the Chicago market and in the West Coast in San Francisco, and we have a very small presence in Los Angeles.
Okay. Now, I found out about you because I was checking to see who was coming to visit the Utopia Media website, and a few of them were from had RCN as their URL, and so I became more interested, and maybe you can tell us what kind of company are you exactly?
Well, that's a good question. I certainly hope by the end of the call you'll be very familiar with us.
I hope so.
We came out of the Telecom Act reform. RCN started and actually is a CLEC provider, and that's probably very familiar to you in terms of the telephony side of it.
Right. That would be a competitive local exchange carrier.
Exactly.
You're essentially a creature of the Telecommunications Reform Act of 1996.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. As I mentioned, our CLEC, we primarily targeted the residential market, and overlaid on that CLEC, we built out broadband cable, a fiber optic, very rich fiber optic network, so that overlaid on the CLEC infrastructure that we have our own fiber backbone system. It is a state-of-the-art fiber system, and so in addition to being able to provide the normal telecommunication services you would expect as a CLEC company, we also provide cable TV, high-speed access services also to our residential customers. We also have a commercial business which services the business enterprise market.
Okay. I don't want you to name any of your competitors by name if you don't want to, but are there other companies that have the same kind of configuration that you do?
Absolutely. We've got some of the very large MSOs, cable companies, like, for example, Comcast and Time Warner and Cablevision that operate in markets all through the U.S. Some operate in our markets and some operate outside of our markets.
And now, how do you determine where you want to operate and what kind of political constraints are there on where you can operate, or can you operate wherever you feel like it?
Well, subject to, on the cable side of the business, the rules operate quite differently than on the telephony side of it. And most of our customers are, of course, cable TV subscribers. On the cable side of our business, the way one operates is it's at a very local level. Rules, you know, the same Telecom Act governs, of course, the cable industry. However, in terms of looking at specific markets to enter in, we actually have to operate at a very local level, at a literally at a municipality level, where we would actually go in and make an application to the local municipal level. And in that application, there are a number of different items that each local municipality would want to see in that application, such as, you know, where, of course, are you going to be building? Who are you going to be servicing? Because they want to make sure that you know, all of their subscribers in an area are going to be provided service. Where are you going to be digging up? So we have to provide that those details. And then there, of course, are other considerations. Are you going to be providing public educational channels? What are the program choice that you're going to be offering consumers? So there are a number of different criteria that you submitted your application at a local level.
Okay, now well, I want to talk about the technology and I want to talk about the politics but and the regulatory climate, but obviously they're very closely connected. Talk about triple play, what that is, and how you deliver that technically, and then we can talk about what the regulatory framework in which that operates is.
The triple play, Mark, refers to the ability for a company to provide both telephony as well as cable TV and then high-speed access, which is basically, in our case, through cable modems. That's what the triple play is referred to, and you may have heard the buzzwords being used in the trade media of a possible quadruple play. And that quadruple play would be introducing wireless into the equation.
Okay. And to belabor the obvious for long-time observers and to help explain it to newcomers, what is it about the technology here that allows the same network to be used to deliver video programming, telephone conversations, data transmission?
Well, we are a facilities provider. And what that means is that we have our own network infrastructure in place. I mentioned to you that we built fiber rings, very rich fiber rings, all through our network. That's the underlying infrastructure that we have. Those fiber rings are, as far as we're aware, are built at a level that is the closest that gets to a subscriber's house. We're not aware of any other entity, including Verizon, that you may have heard that's been building these what we call Fios, trying to offer Fios services in different communities.
Would you call this fiber to the home?
It's this fiber to the premise,
right?
And of course, into the homes. And we have our drop points into the homes. We service up to about 200 homes in each of our nodes, which is, as far as we're aware, the best cluster in terms of what our technology can provide in the marketplace today.
So you're saying the fiber optic delivers it to a node in say, a neighborhood?
That's correct.
And then how are the signals then delivered into the home?
Into a drop box, for example. Your listeners are probably familiar with, basically, when a cable company comes out to their home, they'll ask permission to be able to sort of dig up up to a junction box outside into the home, and then they basically drop the coaxial wiring inside of into the premises, and that's how cable is provided.
So the last 100 feet is done by coaxial cable
in the majority of cases.
Okay, what about using a home plug? What about using a broadband over power line from the neighborhood node into the house? How would that compare with using coaxial cable?
There is that technology. From what I can understand, and in my prior life, I was working in the venture capital area, so I saw a lot of business cases that came actually to me with that technology. They're certainly making strides in terms of being able to use power lines, because you know you would think that it would seem to make sense. After all, as you know, you've got the electric company that's coming right into the house. However, there are some potential drawbacks that I know that the technology has to deal with. For example, one to think of right away would be power surges.
Right.
You know, what happens when you have a power surge?
Maybe it would make the programming better. Maybe the people would sing better.
Well,
maybe not.
It certainly does something. I think, unfortunately, what happens is the programming generally goes away.
Right.
So there are a number of kinks that have to be sort of ironed out. And then, of course, there's the amplification, if you will, of those signals, which are built and spread, across vast areas. But there's certainly other technologies like that are available and are being worked on.
What about Wi-Fi, or in particular MIMO Wi-Fi, using multiple antennas once you've gotten down to the neighborhood level?
Well, Wi-Fi is certainly another technology, but again, in terms of seeing how it's the specific applications, there's still a lot to be done. We, like other companies, of course, are looking at the Wi-Fi area because relative to having to build out, if you will, and you know, continue those drops that we just spoke about.
Right.
To the extent that you can do that wirelessly.
Right.
Not only, you know, saves a lot of cost if it can be done quickly and easily, and also without having to dig up in place. But then some of the things that we have to make sure of, in terms of the up speed and the down speed, are our subscribers going to be able to get that same quality of service? Will they be able to upload and download with the same amount of speed and capacity?
So essentially, you're looking at other ways of delivering the signal right into the home. But for now, you essentially use fiber optic to the neighborhood node and coaxial into the home.
That's correct. But we're also looking at wireless technologies too. For example, there may be some campus locations or within buildings, for example, where once you bring in the connection into the building, you may be able to wirelessly then, of course, spread the signal throughout the building. So we are looking at all of those technologies.
Okay. Now, there have been some discussions lately that, and a lot of developments that have been coming down in this area. The Supreme Court recently ruled that small ISPs who want to piggyback on the plant of cable companies have no. The cable companies have no duty to provide that to them. How did that decision affect your company?
What you're referring to is the Brand X decision.
Brand X, exactly.
Well, it affects our company in the way that you described. That you know, RCN, for example, built at significant cost to itself by raising funds in the public market. Had to raise funds to be able to build its network out. What the decision does is basically say we can't be forced by ISPs to basically piggyback onto our network without compensation and be able for them to go to our customers and basically take our customers away.
Okay, now the basis of the Supreme Court decision was that they decided that the delivery of signals over cable networks was an information service, not a telecommunications
Correct.
Service. And now the phone companies are asking to be able to deliver video signals on a level playing field with the cable companies without having to be locally franchised. What's your take on that from the legal point of view, and how does that affect your business?
Well, two things, Mark. If I could just make sure I answer your question by just separating out, I think, a couple of things that you mentioned. The first is relative to what the telephone companies are asking for, and I believe will shortly get, is basically the ability, the same ability on the DSL side, which is their competitive offering to a cable modem.
In other words, the DSL will be declared an information service as well.
That's correct. That's correct. And relative to a level playing field, that's something that RCN doesn't have any objection with, because they're clear. There are also reasons why the FCC believes that, given what they have granted the cable side, they ought to at least have a level playing field on the wireline side, if you will.
Right. I want to let you finish with what you want to say, but just sort of a preview for when we start talking about the politics of it. Is that a decision that the FCC is empowered to make on its own, and do you expect that it will soon?
Yes, I expect from everything that I've heard that, given the vacancy in the FCC, that. Commissioner Martin is actually trying to get a consensus so he can actually maybe rule on this as early as tomorrow.
As early as tomorrow?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. Well, thanks for giving us the tip. We'll follow up on that.
Thank you. Now, the second part of that relative to the whole franchise issue, that's a much larger issue than this DSL.
Right.
And that is, as you pointed out, very embroiled in terms of the politics. That does impact us quite significantly. If you like, I can elaborate on that.
Sure, because from what you've been saying, you need to go in and get a franchise or something like it from a municipality, which presumably under, we're going to talk about Senator Ensign's bill, you wouldn't have to do anymore, probably.
That's correct. Senator Ensign's bill, it appears that that's something that would be wiped clean, if you will. Our concern from RCN's perspective is, as you pointed out, one of the things that's been alluded to for the need for this is that it's very difficult to be able to get these franchises. That Verizon has to use up a lot of resources to be able to try to get these franchises in place.
Right.
And the arguments made generally between Verizon and the much larger cable companies. We, as you pointed out and as you know, are a very small cable company in terms of number of subscribers. We probably number about 400,000 subscribers in all of our markets.
Right.
Yet we were able to go in within a relatively short period of time and be able to get approximately 130 of these franchises around the country.
And that was in places that already had cable TV franchises?
No, not all.
Oh.
We are an overbuilder, so we go into a lot of those places, but there are a number of them are places where we just went into and made applications. Now, the question is that, you know, one, you have to be able to go in and provide, as I said, respond to a number of basic questions that each municipality has. And quite frankly, they are there for the protection of the local residents, the consumers.
Right.
Our concern is that, you know, lost in this is that a small company like us have been able to do this, so we are mystified about why Congress believes that that Verizon's or SBC's argument that it takes them an awful lot of time. So I think they throw the 30 years out as a sort of scare tactic to say this is how long it's going to take us.
To roll it out or to amortize it or what?
To actually go in there and get their applications approved.
Right.
Now, I happen to reside in the state of Virginia, which is a large home of Verizon, the old Bell Atlantic.
Right.
They were very quickly able to go into a couple of the jurisdictions here. Herndon, for example, is one where they were very quickly able to get a franchise approved.
Where is Herndon geographically in Virginia?
It is very close to Washington Dulles Airport.
Okay.
And they were very quickly able to do that. They're able to get four or five elsewhere. As you probably know, in the state of Texas, it looks like they may be able to actually get a decision there. So it seems to us that where they wanted to focus their attention on, they've managed to get these very quickly. And then where they haven't really made, and as far as we're aware, any great significant efforts to actually go through the application process, they now turned it around to say, well, it's taken them quite a bit of time. So,
and they're saying that in order to...
Well, we believe to be able to tell let Congress assume that, in fact, there is a big problem out there. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing a lot more of is making sure that, you know, folks on the Hill, both the Senate and the House, are aware that actually this is not a greater issue that has been purported to be.
And what's the point of purporting that it is by Verizon?
Well, then the point is basically to get a bill that's very favorable to them in terms of the Ensign bill, which does away with franchises.
And your position is on franchises is what?
Our position is that there is a process that was set out by Congress that basically the states and the local municipalities have jurisdiction over this, and the reason they do is that cable TV is a basic service for consumers, and that at the local level, at the municipality level, it is the best area, if you will, in order to protect those consumers, to make sure that any provider that's coming in to offer its service follows through and makes application and is seen by the local community to be a good corporate citizen.
So you're on the side of continuing to require triple play providers, whatever the FCC says, to get franchises from local municipalities.
Regardless, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
We believe that that's the best sort of process and the one process that was set up in place that has worked. And we believe that we don't see any reason why that should be negated. We don't see what the rush is to be able to give Verizon basically a helping hand. If you're going to be looking at giving helping hands to companies, we are sort of mystified why the RBOC would be those that receive a helping hand.
Although there may be some connection between how much money they spend in lobbying and campaign contributions.
I have no comment on that.
Okay. Tell us why you think Senator Ensign is moving now to essentially, as far as I can see, rewrite the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Well, we believe, first of all, let me say that certainly we know there are not a lot of bills and proposed bills that are circling around the House, and certainly we want to be able to go through as we're doing and look at the Senator's bill, because as we look at it, while there are some significant concerns, we also see that there, you know, that there are some things there that could be of benefit to everyone.
What are the things that you like in the bill?
Well, some of the things in the bill are sort of the language that talks about the need to make sure that there is really a level playing field. That in the area of programming, which we haven't discussed as yet, and I hope we get a chance to
right.
That regarding programming, that some of the programming issues that have faced companies like us in terms of access and pricing and choice are not restricted. So there is language in there that's a step. And the fact that, quite frankly, that programming is also included in this bill, not just simply franchising,
right.
is a good thing. Now we get into the details, and it's in the details that that we have to make sure that we get our comments back, both to the senator as well as a number of other different members, both in the House and Senate, to make sure they understand what some of those issues are.
What are the kind of problems relative to programming that you have to deal with now, and to what extent do you think that the current language in the bill addresses them?
Well, in terms of the specific issues, their access and content, and we just recently filed comments in the Adelphia merger, the FCC. For a company like
I've lost track. Who's Adelphia merging with?
There was a proposal from both Comcast and Time Warner
right.
to purchase the Adelphia assets and then basically split them between them.
Okay.
Comments were due at the FCC, and RCN filed comments, and our comments were along the lines of, and these are some of the same issues that that we're facing here, that as we see more consolidation in the cable industry, and by consolidation meaning not just the operational assets, but also on the content side, so that you have basically what's now vertical integration. So you have not just an operator having operations, but also has the content.
This is how way back then, when John Malone and TCI and Liberty Media positioned themselves.
That's correct. Now, way back when all those deals were happening, little RCN made the rungs on the federal level, both at the FCC as well as the Department of Justice, and said, you know, we can foresee the time when if more concentration like this occurs, it's going to make it very difficult for companies like us to be able to compete, because we don't get access to content, and when we do, the prices are so extreme that it hurts our consumers.
And to belabor the obvious again, when the distribution is consolidated into a few players, production of content is also consolidated, and there's vertical integration in some way or another between the distributors and the content producers, then the choices available to the individual subscribers are reduced, and the monopoly power of the providers is increased with higher prices and fewer choices. Is that
Mark? I couldn't have said it any better.
Okay,
that's exactly the point that we want to make. And we have made, and that we need to make much more vocally and visibly in terms of our discussions that we're going to have on the Hill, as well as on the administrative side relative to the executive branch. Those are the concerns that we have, because ultimately we believe that they impact consumers in terms of what you just said, basically content in the hands of a few, and prices that are extreme, so that the only way we can provide it would be higher rates, which nobody wants.
Okay. Well, given the situation that this is the media that we're talking about, which powerfully influences, if not controls, the mental pictures and mindset and understanding of the situation of the masses of consumers who are dependent on these networks for their information, is there a danger here, do you think, people just won't be able to know about or consider any of the alternatives?
Well, there is that. That's a very good point. You know, we've talked about both the franchising and programming. We haven't even talked about another issue that's cropping up that you might have heard of, which is retransmission.
No, tell us about that. What is it, and what's the problem there?
Well, on retransmission, way back, I believe in the early 90s, 1992, there was another act of Congress relative to the broadcast networks, if you will, that basically gave them the option of either entering into discussions of setting a price in terms of how their signals would be broadcast by the cable companies, or they could enter into, quote, negotiations.
Right.
Many of them assumed back then that negotiations would therefore mean an ability to increase rates, and so many of them opted for negotiations. Well, beginning in 2006, and in fact negotiations are already ongoing, these broadcasters, and as you are aware, who have been losing significantly large amounts of consumers who are watching at the regular terrestrial broadcast,
right,
have looked at this as an opportunity to basically recover a significant amounts of revenue in their discussions with the cable companies. Now, this is something that just does not affect RCN, but also Comcast and Cablevision. The fact, however, that we're a much smaller company in terms of what those rate levels could be could significantly impact us and therefore our consumers again, because if the prices and that are being given to us are at a high enough level, which they appear to be in the first round of what we're seeing, it's very hard for us to be able to survive without passing those on to our consumers. And again, it's a significant increase,
which makes you less competitive. Are you saying?
Absolutely.
Are you saying then, when these terrestrial broadcasters offer the retransmission of their content, do they give a bulk discounts, meaning that the companies with a bigger subscriber bases are able to get it at a lower per capita basis, and you have to pay more?
Well, that's sort of what the larger cable companies will say that they're doing, which are quote unquote these volume discounts. But when you sort of peer beneath them, and part of the problem is for us, Mark, is that when you enter into negotiations both with the cable entities as well as with the broadcasters, they tie us up in a lot of legal jargon that say we can't really reveal what they're sending to us.
Okay.
Now, if the FCC or Congress
they don't want to be transparent, you're
absolutely,
saying?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, if the FCC or Congress, which apparently is, as we understand today, is likely to hold hearings in the fall, and part of my uphill battle is going to be, quite frankly, Mark, is going to be trying to make sure that they allow entities like an RCN to be at the table rather than simply allow the giants there.
Right.
Part of that will be to be able to say, the Hill, as well as the FCC, you have the authority to require that we display what these contracts are, because we believe that if they see them and the media and our consumers see them, they'll quickly see what's apparent here.
Okay, so it's a transparency issue that ends up being a competitive issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, talk about specifically what you're going to be doing to lobby one way or another and all in the directions you want with the Ensign bill.
Well, again, RCN being a company that is, which is a very small company compared to the large companies that obviously have significant war chests to be able to do this, just to give you an idea of how it's impacted us, we have had to hire a very well-known but quite expensive law firm called Swidler Berlin.
Right.
That's located here in the Washington D.C. area. We have had to hire a lobbyist. I and my CEO and others are going to have to spend an awful lot more of our time as opposed to running our business.
Right.
Now having to get directly involved in the fray and having to be able to push a much more visible RCN to be able to try to get on the agenda, if you will, before the different administrative branches such as the Department of Justice or the FCC and on the Hill. That's a very expensive and time-consuming, but something that we have to do because the very very stake of our business is here at risk.
Okay, before we talk more about the politics of this, I wanted to add one more overlay of technology here, which is itself also an administrative and political issue, which is the transition to digital broadcasting and the spectrum and what that means for corporations that have locally owned stations that are rebroadcasters. What technical dimensions and added complications in terms of the regulatory and political side is brought in by that transition?
Well, it's interesting that you asked the question, and thank you. There are a couple of things. On the technology side, of course, RCN, like other companies, are quickly upgrading their their plant to make sure that it's 100% digital. And we need to do that for a variety of reasons. One that you mentioned, quite frankly, other reasons include being competitive because, as you know, satellite is all digital, for example, like DirecTV.
Right.
So we need to make sure, of course, that in order to stay competitive, that we have to upgrade all of our technology. But the interesting there's an interesting issue relative to sort of this digital platform, if you will. In the negotiations that we're having with the terrestrial folks, what often that they will demand in terms of their negotiations with us is to the extent they have digital stations, and I think the most famous one that you're probably familiar with is Fox and FX.
Right.
There is, and there are going to be demands placed upon us that, in order for us to have agreements in place, that they're going to ask us to be forced to carry, for example, you know, their digital stations.
Right.
And you know, again, being forced to do something that may be uneconomical makes no sense whatsoever. But again, it's something that we have to be concerned with. And one of the issues that again that we're going to be bringing forth and want to make much more visible to the Hill as they're looking at legislation. I mean, the point is, with all of the issues that you just brought up, there are a number of things that have to be looked at. That's our point that we want to make to the Hill, is that when you're looking at this at this whole industry and looking to look at a way in which to deregulate it and to get to a level playing field, we're not saying that we don't want competition. In fact, we want competition. In areas where we have a level playing field, we do very well against the competition. But what we want to make sure is that they look at all the different facets of this, which include not just franchising, but it also includes programming. It also includes the retransmission. It includes the terrestrial. It includes all of the aspects that we just spoke about. Because to look at each one of them piecemeal does not is not helpful for consumers, which is what we're all supposed to be focused on.
Okay, and looking at several of the elements you mentioned, if say Fox requires you to carry all of its or more of its programs than you want in order to carry any of them, combined with what you were talking about before with the untransparent pricing structure, there are a number of ways in which you're essentially at the mercy of these larger companies, and you're saying that that needs to be taken into account in a holistic consideration
absolutely.
Of what
now,
the picture is.
Absolutely. Now, you know, given the as I mentioned, the negotiations and what we're required, let me just be clear.
Sure.
I didn't specifically say Fox is demanding that of us. I mentioned that that's something that's thrown up there as an example.
Right.
But your premise of what you just pointed out is correct.
So the issue essentially then is a huge distributors and huge producers of content and consumers and the FCC and the Congress and little RCN here trying to find a way to communicate its message to lawmakers and the media and the public.
Absolutely. I mean, Mark, RCN was actually the poster child that came out of the Telecom Act. If you will recall, when the Act was created, the whole idea was that we were going to see RBox getting into the cable company's territories, RBox getting into each other's territories.
Right.
Everyone was going to be competing with each other.
That's right.
Now, I would ask if anyone has seen that happen, and the answer is no. We, however, RCN, along with a few other what are called overbuilders, were the only ones that actually went out to the capital market, borrowed money at quite significant rates, and basically took the risk of saying, this is great. This gives us an opportunity to be able to compete and actually offer consumers choice.
So you believed in the promise of the Telecommunication Act of 1996.
Exactly. We believed in the promise of the Telecom Act. What we have before us, however, if I can borrow something from a movie that we all saw a few years ago, is The Perfect Storm.
Right.
And what we want to make sure is that as we consider ourselves David here versus Goliath, is that the government does not take our slingshot away from us.
Well, the perfect storm was a result of natural forces. The forces we're talking here are social, political, economic, and all are made by people. What are the elements of that perfect storm as you see it?
Well, you've got basically the Arbox on one side that are lobbying very, very heavily in terms of being given relief on the franchising.
Right.
You have the larger cable companies that have vertical integration that are saying, you know, allow us basically the freedom to be able to charge for customized content, and there's no definition of that. And then you have, on the terrestrial side, you have the broadcasters also coming in now and saying, oh, by the way, you know, here are the negotiations, and, you know, this is what we are requiring in terms of the negotiations. Here are the rates, and here's what we want you to carry. We've got all of that occurring, and as you said, you've got, you know, entities like RCN that are very small, and, you know, in terms of... we're not asking for handouts. We're simply saying, as you develop a level playing field, make sure you take all of this into account, so that really, if it again is consumers that ultimately we're looking to benefit out of this, that their interests are the ones that are being taken into account.
Well, I see you here and there now in the George Clooney role on the boat there, and the crew is are all the consumers that you're trying to serve, and the waves marked Arbox, Telco, and Cable are sort of getting ready to wash over your little boat there.
Well, we certainly hope that that's not the case, but we believe that that we need. You asked a question a few minutes ago about what it is that that RCN has to do. It is an uphill. It is uphill for us, but we believe that. You know, the issues that are out there are very basic, and we believe fundamentally our approach to them are correct. As I said, we came under Telecom Act. We are the real competitor that's out there. We're not simply taking a cable industry view. We're not simply taking an Arbox view. We're not taking a terrestrial view. We wanted to point out exactly what are the issues in each of those different areas, and we believe that if they're not addressed, what the promise is of telecom reform will be negated.
Okay. Could you very briefly sort of sketch out two scenarios, one in which the Arbox and the cable companies and the terrestrial broadcasters get everything they want and move ahead in the directions they want to go, and then we'll talk about an alternative to that that would be more, let's call it RCN-centric. Talk about what at the extreme case, where you think some of these trends could take the communication, the telecommunications and content distribution industries.
Well, I would simply refer to, I think it was a very good a premise that you laid out a few minutes ago when you said you know, taken to an extreme, what you could end up with is having very, very large conglomerates in a location offering consumers less choice.
Right.
And therefore, what you have is basically continued rate increases and customers, consumers basically having little choice in terms of the programming that they want to see.
And what communications or political options would they have, opportunities or options would they have at that point to communicate with each other about their grievances?
That's a very good question.
Okay, let me, before I ask you to talk about a more benign set of developments, comment if you would a little bit on the while the phone companies and the cable companies claim to be competing with each other in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania generally last year, they got really close together and lobbied the state government to pass a bill that would have prohibited Philadelphia from offering a wireless, a municipally based alternative. What's your take on municipal wireless? Do you have any involvement in it? And what do you think it says about the politics of these issues that we've been talking about already?
Well, again, relative to looking at customer choice, clearly that's what the Philadelphia city was looking at in terms of being able to offer something to its residents, that something that was affordable and gave them choice. You know, we really have nothing against that. We're not involved in any of that lobbying.
Right.
Relative to our involvement in terms of what cities are looking to do, quite frankly, in areas that we're aware where cities are looking to develop their networks, we have gone into them and offer our expertise in terms of helping them develop actually those networks, and have even offered and are putting in proposals to help them manage and run them.
Okay,
we look at that as opportunities as opposed of being risks.
So you would are you in support of the Lautenberg-McCain bill, the Community Broadband Act?
Well, we certainly, in terms of some of the aspects of that, believe that you know, we understand why the bill has some of the provisions. We want to obviously take a look at some of the other provisions in terms of what gets added to it. But relative to you know, the prospect of allowing communities to be able to have choice for their consumers, that's a very good goal.
Okay. Now, next to the last question here, could you spell out a little bit what you would like to see in terms of the politics, the regulation, and the opportunities that would open up for RCN to pursue a different scenario than the one we've the perfect storm that we've talked about?
What we would like to see is the words that are used in the senator's bill to actually be included in the fine details so that there really is a level playing field. We believe in choice for customers so that if, in fact, the telephone companies want to enter into video, they should enter the field as everyone else has so that in a jurisdiction, we would welcome having a Verizon, a Comcast or Time Warner, an RCN, and even more companies offering consumers choice because we believe the marketplace should decide that. So what we would ask is that rather than bailouts or handouts being given to the largest entities, both on the telephony side or on the cable side, that the rules of the game are being followed by all of the entities and that no handouts or bailouts are given so that the RBOCs have to get franchises at a municipality level. The programmers, the large MSOs, cannot use their aggregation of content to stifle the choice to consumers and have to provide it to all at the same rates that they charge themselves. That would go a long way over, and in relative to the terrestrial players, that they enter into negotiations that are fair and are not arbitrary, and they don't use their content as a way to basically stifle it being provided to consumers.
Okay, so what you're essentially saying is that you want the Broadband Consumer Choice Act of 2005 to provide consumer choice.
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to thank you for talking to us about this. It's going to go out over the Utopia Media News Network, and we'll get as many people as possible to listen to it and presumably take some action. Is there any action that you'd recommend that people could take if they're persuaded by the points you make?
Absolutely. They should let their congressmen know and their senators know that to eliminate franchises for the RBOCs really does not benefit them and, in fact, actually would lessen competition and increase their rates. And that they should also make sure that on the programming side that they should push their representatives to make sure that access and pricing to content are truly available to them and that their rights and protections are there at the municipality level.
Okay, good. I want to thank you very much for talking to us today on American Politics today.
Thank you so much, Mark. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.